India wants to nearly double the size of its economy in the next 5 years. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. India's new finance minister has presented her first budget since the election. She said she wants the economy to grow to $5 trillion by 2025. But how realistic is that target? Here's the BBC's Joe Miller from outside Parliament in New Delhi.
This is a very, very difficult target because India's economy has been slowing. It's still growing at roughly 6.8% a year, which may sound a lot to people who are used to the American economy or European economies. But of course, India needs 7% plus growth just to keep up with its current spending. Nirmala Sitharaman, who's the first female finance minister in many, many decades, had a lot of work to do today. She came out and said that the Indian economy is on track to become a $3 trillion economy this year. And to help India along the way with that, there have been some incentives for companies to come over here. She talked about opening up the aviation industry, boosting India's education system to attract talent from other parts of the world.
India is very energy hungry, but it also has a lot of environmental problems. And there were some proposals in the budget trying to address that.
There were. There was a proposal specifically on tax breaks for the interest on loans to buy electric cars. Of course, it's quite difficult to charge any electric cars in India, so how much of an effect that will have on a market that is almost exclusively combustion engine cars remains to be seen. But the big announcement, and the one that the stock markets haven't taken kindly to, is an increase of 1 rupee per litre on taxes on petrol and diesel. That's just over $0.01.
Now, the US has formally initiated a dispute with India at the World Trade Organization. They've had tiffs about tariffs and barriers for American products coming into India. Have we seen any reaction to those issues?
Well, we were expecting some reaction, but there was very, very little on this supposedly escalating tensions between the US and India. But I think what the finance minister is trying to do is work around the sidelines on this and signal to America that India is open for business and it has other trading partners around the world, and that it will provide incentives for companies, for multinational companies from places other than the United States to come and do business with India.
Joe Miller there. Let's do the numbers. In Germany, factory orders plunged nearly 8% in May from a year ago. The figures are the latest in a string of dismal data showing the impact of the global trade slowdown. And the jobs report in the U.S. today is expected to show 160,000 new jobs created in June. If it is a disappointing report, it could give the Fed more ammunition to cut rates at the end of this month. The U.S. recently put Scotch whiskey on a new list of European imports facing possible tariffs. But even without the U.S. threat, the drink, distilled in Scotland with an age-old recipe, has seen its market share decline. That's led for the first time to an official relaxing of rules on how it's made, as I've been finding out. The whiskey shop in the historic English town of Bath is a magical setting for a tasting evening.
There are long lines of lovely whiskey glasses on the main table here, filled with different varieties of the tipple.
For centuries, Scotch whiskey has been made with water and malted barley, distilled in Scotland and aged for 3 years in oak casks, giving it a distinctive taste. Tom Bazzard leads tastings at the whiskey shop.
For a Scotch, a classic taste, would be a more kind of peated, smoky, earthy note to it. That's what separates Scottish whiskies from the rest of the world.
But that classic taste hasn't been enough. Last year, Scotch whiskies' global market share by volume dropped 12% from 2008, according to an industry tracker. Over the same period, US whiskies grew by roughly 6%. Japanese and Irish whiskies also increased sales. To stem those losses, the Scotch Whisky Association recently broke with tradition and said it would allow producers to use a wider range of casks to mature the drink, including ex-tequila and Calvados barrels.
The cask makes a huge difference. We've got port cask ones tonight, rum cask as well, and they all make such a difference.
Diageo, which makes 40% of the world's Scotch, says it can now reuse its tequila casks, a move that will cut costs. Gavin Hewitt is former head of the Scotch Whisky Association. He says distillers still have to ensure their product looks and tastes like Scotch, a drink he says still reigns supreme.
Scotch is up against greater competition than it was, but it still dominates the whisky market and will continue to do so for a very long time. it still is 3 times bigger than the bourbon industry. It's about 30 times bigger than the Japanese industry.
We're going outside of Scotland and towards Taiwan.
Back at the tasting evening, with most of the glasses now gone, I sample opinion.
Yes, we tried Thai whiskies, Japanese whiskies. I still prefer Scottish whiskies.
For you, does it have to be a Scotch whiskey? Are you a purist?
No, the last one I bought was from Wales, actually, and it was made in a Madeira cask. So it's a very different taste, different location.
I like Irish whiskey, especially Jameson's.
So you're not a purist either?
No, not a purist. But I still stand by the saying that Scotch is only Scotch. It's always been Scotland for hundreds of years.
Despite a soft spot for Scotland amongst some, everyone here is happy to toast a greater variety of flavours for the water of life. Well, I can tell you I was a bit wobbly on my bike after that assignment. Happy Friday, everyone. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report, coming to you live from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.